The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now it's time to meet two guests who are first timers. They've never talked about this particular thing before. We're talking about ADHD. 10% of people in Ireland have access to ADHD treatment, but those numbers don't reflect the current demand. And the increase in demand has resulted in a shortage of services for those with ADHD. So we're going to talk to someone who has ADHD, and that's Ethan Lloyd. He's a young person. What age are you, if you want to tell us?
Yeah, of course. Yes, I'm 23.
Okay. And Dr. Michelle Hill, consultant psychiatrist. I'm not going to ask you your age,
thank you,
Michelle, but you're very welcome to the program. Ethan, talk to me about your diagnosis of ADHD. It wasn't what originally troubled you.
Yeah, perfect. So I grew up in 2002, I suppose, in Dublin. So I originally was diagnosed with dyspraxia basically all my life, which is a motor coordination issue, so basically balance, etc. So from that range, I was luckily enough in contact with a psychologist my whole life, and he was brilliant, to be honest, and cognitive behavioural therapy as well. So lucky enough, I was kind of in the area of healthcare already.
So what were the practical difficulties that dyspraxia threw up?
Yeah, of course. So for example, as in it sounds very simple, but at the time when I was growing up, like tying shoelaces or, for example, playing piano with two hands or even catching a football on my left hand or sort of solo on my left foot, example like that.
Now, would you be able to make your way around a city without Google Maps?
To be honest, it's more the memory issue of that, yeah. So Google Maps would kind of be by me in my pocket. Even my past employees who I work with, they've kind of laughed about the whole time I'd need it everywhere I go. So
you depend on those kind of...
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Now, we're talking about dyspraxia and the difficulties that that can raise. I mean, I remember talking to someone with dyspraxia and they couldn't draw a triangle, for example.
Mm.
It didn't look like a triangle.
Yeah.
It looked like three lines that never intersected. So there are those kind of difficulties as well. But when did ADHD come into the frame? When was it suspected that this might also be a problem?
Yeah, of course. So it was more so in transition year. So funny enough, it was that a disability workshop came into our school in transition year. And I remember they were talking about Richard Branson and kind of the characteristics that he had. And I didn't really know what ADHD was at the time. And I started laughing to one of the lads in class, and I was like, hold on,
to be a billionaire.
Yeah, yeah, he kind of sounds like a funny dude. But then I kind of just looked out the window for a minute, and it kind of dawned on me, hold on, that's kind of me, and all the traits are me, what I do on a daily basis. So kind of went on there, like most people, went online, did a kind of free test, I suppose, in the traits of ADHD, did a free kind of questionnaire, and a lot of them were scoring very, very highly. So I went to my psychologist. Originally, as I said, I was diagnosed with dyspraxia. It was easier that way to get healthcare. And we did an official test, and funny enough, obviously, kind of got on the high end of ADHD then, and kind of, I suppose, when I was 16 or so.
So tell me about how that made schoolwork difficult. I mean, you thought it was dyspraxia, but now it was compounded by ADHD. How did it impact on your schoolwork?
Yeah, of course. So kind of like most people with ADHD, education was very difficult compared to the average person. So even memory in terms of that alone, I'd have to write, say, for example, essays and stuff that were daunting enough for me. I'd have to write, say, for example, a sentence to learn it, it'd take someone 10 minutes. I'd have to write like four A4 pages just to remember that. And then when I do it, it'd be active recall be an issue, along with, say, for example, time management or forgetfulness. So I'd often go to classes, for example, forget my copies at home. And then the teacher, you know, typically would be like, where's your homework? I'd be like, well, I promise I have it done, get the homework sort of thing. Like, so.
Okay, so this was in school. And when you were diagnosed and had that confirmed, how did it change? Number one, the way your teachers reacted to you, how did it change the way you studied?
Yeah, so I suppose it was a huge thing. So there's loads of resources online now more than ever. And to be honest, even in college, I'll talk about that in a minute in terms of ChatGPT and how helpful that is. But even in secondary school, like the resources are insane. Like, as in, for example, whether it be extra time management or it's just the teachers can understand why you do certain things the way you do. And it's kind of not this confusion between both parties, which is crucial, even sort of in the workplace. Because, for example, they can be often confused and maybe give out to you because you're not, say, because say, for example, typically you're doing very poor academically, but if they have, say, like I suppose, instructions in place that kind of help you or extra accommodations, it kind of benefits you that way more than someone else.
Okay, now that's school and you got through, you got a leaving cert and went to college. What difference was it in college?
So I suppose college is huge on an independence level because say with ADHD, like you're talking about awareness, you're talking about, say, for example, like I did very well in college, thankfully, but at the same time was the same person who kind of missed my orientation day because I kind of mixed up the dates. But at the same time, it was more so as I got through to college progressively, I became better at managing it. So say, for example, I studied Bachelor of Business Studies in UL and the awareness around that was insane. Like they had the disability services and say, for example, whether it be extra parenting credits or a disability note taker, for example, because when you're in college and ADHD and you're trying to listen to lecture and also take notes, you kind of realize at the end of the lecture, hold on, I've only a few scribbles because you can't remember when you're writing what he said, like say 5 minutes prior to that, for example.
Okay, but the fact that you were doing what you really wanted to do rather than all the subjects that you have to do for the Leaving Cert, did that make a difference that you were focused?
Yeah, huge. So the positive thing with ADHD is that when you love something, you do it probably better than most people. So obviously the downfall is when you don't like something, it's a lot more harder to stay focused on it, and you kind of have to force yourself or rewire the kind of balance in your brain, I suppose, that you're trying to make you to do that.
Now, after the diagnosis, were you medicated and do you have ongoing medication?
So medication's, I suppose, a toppy issue. So basically I was originally on it, but I think it's kind of a trial and error basis. I didn't really find it was good. I felt like it made me into a zombie, and I think an awful lot of people can rely on it as a crutch, and kind of this, it's kind of advertised and publicitized as this kind of be-all and end-all, where there's those other tricks like cognitive behavioral therapy or, for example, in terms of forgetfulness, to do reminder lists on your phone, for example.
Yeah. Now, you are upfront about ADHD with any employer and so on, and you've got a great job coming up. And you're prepared to put yourself out there really as a role model for ADHD and how to get through it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So even with previous employers, I think it's kind of, people have this stereotype around it. Like, I think it's still kind of the unknown of ADHD, whereas say, for example, other neurotypical disorders, like say dyslexia, it's kind of maybe a bit more straightforward that it's primarily to do with reading, for example, maybe to do with emotions around that. But say when you say to an employer, oh, I have ADHD, there's this, the kind of stigma all on where do we even start? Because it could be, say, for example, the spectrum. So it's not say, for example, if I have ADHD, the person next to me with ADHD could have a completely different sort of variety of symptoms, for example.
Now, what about how you have ADHD? I mean, does it, quote unquote, run in the family?
Yeah, great question. Yeah. So it's actually very inheritable. So that's kind of, I find that a lot of the diagnosis is, there's a lot more undiagnosed people in Ireland at the moment than there is diagnosed. And I believe there was a statistic last year that was released that was basically four times the amount of undiagnosed people that know they kind of have it but are on waiting lists, for example, unfortunately. And that kind of comes down to, I think, there's a lot more awareness and tools and resources rather than, say, back in like 60, 70 years ago around it. And that's kind of primarily down to genetics. So, for example, even in my case, like whether it be inheritability, that more than likely, if you have it, it's kind of like a mirror reflection of your parents. So when I was diagnosed, it was more so my parents were like, hold on, I've had all these symptoms, but I wasn't kind of had the resources.
So did it turn out the two of them had ADHD as well?
Yeah, well, it's kind of, they're kind of still managing themselves, really. But yeah, it can be very inheritable. So for example, kids and stuff, I think it's 60% or something is inheritable. So it's huge. Like, so I think a lot of the diagnosis is now more than ever, and why it's getting the spotlight is that basically it's the same kind of as I was going through, in that it's kind of mirror reflections of people. Their sons or their daughters get diagnosed and then they kind of see it in themselves, and they didn't have the resources when they were younger. And that's kind of what's happening, I believe.
Well, you're certainly an inspiration, I think, to someone who gets a diagnosis of ADHD, because you're getting on with your life, you've got a good job, and you're talking about it and helping other people. So that's fantastic, Ethan. Now, listening to a conversation with us here in studio is Dr. Michelle Hill, who's a consultant psychiatrist. The numbers seem enormous. 10% of the population could have ADHD.
Yeah, well, the prevalence hasn't really changed over the years. We've always known statistically that about 5 to 7% of the children would meet criteria for diagnosis of ADHD, and 3 to 5% of adults. But the reality is, on the ground, practically, nobody was actually being assessed and treated for adult ADHD. So now, you know, since COVID in particular, I think, you know, when the scaffolding and external structure was taken away from people, people started going, gosh, I'm finding life way more difficult to manage. They were on social media. They were seeing people saying, I've realised that I have ADHD. They were identifying a lot of the symptoms and they were coming forward. And a bit like what Ethan said, you know, a child was diagnosed with the condition, the parents realised they had it. So what's actually happening, Pat, like if you say 3 to 5% of the adult population of ADHD, conservatively, that's 120,000 adults in Ireland have ADHD, and we don't have anything like that amount of people coming forward saying
but
they have ADHD.
People will maybe say, hang on a second, you're just medicalizing normal eccentricities.
Yeah, and I think that is something that everybody's concerned about, because we're hearing about it a lot for the first time. It's in the media, you know.
You know, in terms of autism, people say, well, everyone's on the spectrum.
Yeah, and I'm sure this happened to you, Ethan, when you said I've ADHD. I'm sure people said everybody has a bit of ADHD nowadays. And people do say that. And we certainly live in a more distractible world, and we're certainly more overstimulated with our phones and emails.
But I mean, to say a bit of ADHD, that's...
There's no such thing. You either have ADHD or you don't. And ADHD is a common cognitive neurotype or brain difference. It's a neurodevelopment mental disorder. There's three different domains. You know, it affects your attention, your energy, your self-regulation. There's, you know, in order to meet criteria for a diagnosis of ADHD, you have to go through a comprehensive assessment. So people will say, I think maybe I have a bit of ADHD because I heard that if you forget your keys and you're, you know,
don't we all? Yeah.
You know, and if you look at the basic screening tool online for ADHD, or if somebody asks me, what are those kind of screening questionnaires? It might say, do you work better at the last minute or closer to a deadline? A lot of people do, is the reality. But if that's just your modus operandi, your life is just that bit more stressful than everybody else's, you're operating in a kind of state of stress or overwhelm, in adults, often what you see is very variable performance. So they can be on fire in the workplace or in an interesting environment, like what Ethan was saying. They're doing things, they're performing above and beyond everyone else. But actually, they can't kind of tidy the house or remember the kids' timetables or do the laundry or get out the door in the morning. You know, so there's this kind of mismatches. Or, you know, they might find it very difficult to do basic things and easier to do harder things. They're kind of overscheduled. They're on the go. They're busy. And then contrastingly, sometimes they're finding it very hard to get going. So the title ADHD stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. But there's many professionals who say it should be called Variable Attention Stimulus Trait, because in fact, you have variable levels of attention. You can be hyper focused on an area of interest, not focused at all. You can be very overactive or unactive.
Now, is there a physical pathology? I mean, if you got brain scans, would it show?
Unfortunately, brain scans, because I think that would make it much easier to diagnose who has it and who doesn't have it. There are objective clinical measures called continuous performance tests, which try and simulate an environment that's boring and low stimulus on the brain to highlight, you know, the person's reaction to that. And it will show at that moment in time if the person's more impulsive or pressing the button too quickly, or if they're not paying any attention. But the reality is, all that says to you at that moment in time is that person inattentive or hyperactive in that moment in time?
And in that moment, yeah.
And you could have had a drink. You could have, you know, be depressed. You could be anxious, etc. So you do need a really good comprehensive clinical history to tease out.
Now, when you do diagnose that someone has ADHD, I mentioned medication to Ethan there, and he said, tried it, not for him. He's got coping mechanisms, which is kind of worked up. You've worked them up yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So how many of the adults that you treat would end up on medication?
So Ethan's right. You know, the most important treatment for ADHD is the formal diagnosis. And everybody with ADHD will say that. It's the first day of the rest of their lives. So becoming an expert in ADHD, I always say to people, you know, I want you to come back in and be telling me stuff about ADHD the next time you see me, because they're the people who tend to do the best with the condition. Become an expert in themselves, develop kind of a standard operating procedure for how they work in the world, because the first line treatment for ADHD is actually environmental modifications. So the analogy being that if you have a seal on land, they're going to look really clumsy, but if they're swimming in the sea, they're at ease. So if the ADHDer figures out a life that suits them, designs their life around their brain and mobilises their strengths, you know, they may not even need medication. Now, in reality, Pat, people who come to see me might have been doing that for years. So I don't hold back and say, listen, off you go and modify your environment. If they're already doing that, I'll put them straight on medication, because that's the first line.
Because they're still having troubles.
Exactly, yes. And I should say, it's not just the symptoms. They have to be having an impact on your life. So you have to be affecting your relationships, affecting your ability in the workplace. And most importantly, you don't just develop ADHD at the age of 40. What'll happen is you might realise you have it at the age of 40, and then you look back and there'll have been signs all throughout your life that you had it. So the medications work by increasing dopamine in the prefrontal cortex, which is kind of your organising centre of the brain. And that basically tunes down some of the noise of the relentless mental activity that's going on. But as patients often say to me, yes, the medication slows down my brain. It helps me kind of be more present in the moment, but it doesn't make the bed for me in the morning. I have to learn the skills.
I'll read you some of the comments coming in. I was diagnosed with ADHD last January. I'm 49.
Yeah.
It has been life-changing. I was misdiagnosed as having anxiety 20 years ago. Very little awareness as to what ADHD is, even among GPs. Cost a lot to get assessed privately, but well worth it. I've had my son 9 diagnosed with ADHD this year and can see the same traits in me all my life. Mm. I went private for myself and on meds since July, and it has changed my life. A game changer. More should do it. My whole life just makes sense now, especially rejection sensitivity. Mm. I don't feel like there's something wrong with me anymore. Fair play to those guys talking about it. It's great to hear and great to spread awareness. Ethan, for you, I mean, were you going through school thinking, I'm clumsy, I'm stupid?
Yeah, it was more so, not really the clumsiness as such, it was more so the stupidity. Because, for example, I'd be failing, didn't know why I was failing, or, for, as I said, having to write the same sort of one-liner down on four A4 pages when someone else could do it and memorise within 5 minutes, and I'd be there working 2 to 3 times harder than anyone else and still getting probably half the grade as they would. So I suppose in rejection, sense of dysphoria and that, no, like it's a thing with ADHD that, like, with criticism, like with ADHD, you find your emotions kind of very heightened with the kind of brain, or with the brain you have. So, for example, if someone says, like, you're a failure or something, someone else could be able to, you know, sweep that off. Whereas with ADHD, you'd be hyper-focused on that for, like, say, days. And you'd be like, well, why did she say that? Or, like, was, what am I? And then you kind of go down to this sort of emotionless pit, whereas someone else could just rationalise themselves.
Someone's already said to me on the text screen, going down a rabbit hole about
exactly, yeah, yeah.
My son was diagnosed with ADHD in fifth year. It was a game changer. The medication worked to get him through the Leaving Cert, although he didn't enjoy the meds. Mm. Now he's in college. In the course that he really wanted, and he doesn't need meds at all. Like Ethan mentioned, I, his mother, got diagnosed as well, and it's been a game changer for me. This is like a familiar story now.
To be honest, Pat, when I first got into ADHD, I was like, this must be what it's like to be a surgeon as a doctor, because, you know, it can be really life-changing. You make the diagnosis, you start the person on treatment, and there's a very clear before and after, unlike some other areas of mental health. You know, about 70% of people do get some response on medication. Now, a lot of people find it hard to tolerate and might not want to stay on it long-term once they've put some structures in place, and that's absolutely fine.
Okay, now, a final word from both of you to people who might suspect, listening to our conversation, that they may have ADHD. What do you think they should do, Ethan?
Yeah, definitely. So I suppose if you think of it at all, be treated the same as someone who has a formal diagnosis. So in that regard, obviously check in your GP. Obviously the waiting list, unfortunately, at the moment is kind of very long, and it's kind of very hard. Like, say, for example, when I was in college, everyone kind of wants a formal diagnosis. So unfortunately, the way it is, which, to be fair, UL, I know, are trying to sort of solve, is that, for example, if you don't have a diagnosis, you can't really get the same support as someone who does. But obviously, that doesn't discount at all that you may or know that you have. Let's just say, for example, it might be too expensive or the waiting list. So I definitely try and reach out to colleges and say, for example, as I said, your local GP and try and get a start there. But if you do, like, honestly, even with me in college, like, ChatGPT was unbelievably helpful. Like, I know there's kind of weariness around AI, but for example, I used to go on ChatGPT during college and be like, look, I have ADHD, and kind of find symptoms, and it'll help you that way.
Okay, and briefly, Michelle?
In terms of going to your GP, write out a list of every symptom that you have and how it's affecting your life, so that you can present more clearly when you attend your GP, because I think that'll really help. And also go to the ADHD Ireland website. The information is amazing. They run amazing educational webinars, and they also have a fantastic acceptance commitment therapy group for people who self-identify as ADHD, so you don't even need to have ADHD to be part
Very
of
Very good. Dr. Michelle Hill, who's a consultant psychiatrist, and Ethan Lloyd, who has ADHD and is working very well with it. Thank you both very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.